It's Monday, May 8th. Two tragedies in Texas. We start here. A gunman opening fire on innocent shoppers at a mall near Dallas.
There's this guy dressed in all black, wearing a vest.
What we know about the shooting and a separate incident near Texas's southern border. Demonstrators in New York are calling for an ex-Marine to face charges.
We do know that this case now could likely go before a grand jury as early as this week.
How the death of a homeless man has become a flashpoint for conversations around public safety and mental health. And they're only 4 years apart.
This is not a position of strength vis-a-vis what most first-term presidents look like.
But Americans show deep divides on how age may factor into a possible rematch between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Mark Remillard. Good morning. Brad is off, so I will be here with you in the meantime.
First and foremost, we need to keep the families impacted by this tragedy in our prayers.
Late Saturday, the U.S. saw yet another mass shooting.
This is the world that we live in right now.
It was like a war scene.
It was the country's 199th of the year and the second deadliest, according to the Gun Violence Archive. Eight people shopping at a mall in Allen, Texas, gunned down on the week before Mother's Day.
I never thought we would be involved and watch something like that happen. It's messed up.
ABC's Jim Ryan lives in nearby Dallas and was at the scene after this tragic shooting took place. And I want to warn our listeners, there is some graphic audio here, but Jim, what do we know about how this shooting went down and where it took place?
It was about 3:30 in the afternoon, Mark. The premium outlet malls there in Allen, it's one of the biggest in the whole area, 120 stores there. This is an outdoor mall, walking between stores and stores you're outside.
We see the guy, there's this guy dressed in all black, wearing a vest.
A driver pulled into the parking lot. He stopped, stepped out, opened fire, and killed the people who were standing there in front of him. Pandemonium, I think, is the best way to describe it. The chaos of people running, hundreds of people running away from this scene.
We saw sparks flying, like it was right in front of us, so we just ran into the Converse store. They locked the door.
Yeah, everybody was trying to get out, and it was a lot of people, like I think probably like 50 people in the store. So we were all rushing towards the back exit, so it was really difficult to get out.
In some of the video, you see this, Mark. You see people running. You see in some of the dash cam video that Uber drivers have shared. It didn't appear that he was targeting anybody. It just seemed to be random shots fired into the people that he saw there in front of him.
It's way too much blood. There was no way those individuals were going to survive.
On the way out, there was a couple of people down, and the actual shooter was down as well.
The police officer who happened to be there at the Allen Premium Outlets was responding to a different call, something unrelated.
He heard gunshots, located the gunshot, located the shooter, neutralized the shooter, neutralized the threat.
And again, this being the Saturday before Mother's Day weekend, the place was absolutely packed. Thousands of people there in that mall that day or alongside that mall and experiencing what happened that day.
What do we know about the suspected gunman in this shooting? We know authorities have a suspect and are looking into his past, correct?
Yeah, we now know this person was Mauricio Garcia, a 33-year-old who lives somewhere in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
We believe at this point that the shooter acted alone. This is an ongoing active investigation.
He had a tactical vest on. He was armed with a rifle and some kind of a handgun.
They tell us that in 2008, he was discharged from the Army over mental health concerns.
FBI agents who have examined the weapons found insignia indicating a right-wing extremist ideology. They're looking not just at the crime itself, but also at the social media footprint of Mauricio Garcia, trying to learn something about the motivation for the killing of those people outside this mall.
It's a tragedy I hope we don't see again anytime soon. You know, when Uvalde happened, I often thought, I wonder what some of these parents thought. I know what they thought because I'm thinking it now.
Jim, the response to this shooting early on, whenever these kinds of incidents occur, no doubt immediately we see calls for gun reforms. But we saw Texas Governor Greg Abbott on Fox News yesterday not calling for gun reforms, but mental health measures.
We are working to address that anger and violence by going to its root cause, which is addressing the mental health problems behind it.
Texas is a very pro-Second Amendment state, but it's also one that's seen a fair number of these horrific shootings in recent memory.
Well, right, and in fact, this one came just a week after another mass shooting happened in the Houston area. A man down there got angry with his neighbors. He pulled out his own rifle, walked next door, opened fire, and killed five people, including a child there in that house before escaping. So this does happen fairly often. This is something that Governor Greg Abbott has been dealing with since the beginning of his administration. That as a conservative Republican, he's very reluctant to say that he's interested in any sort of reform at all. The surveys across this state consistently have shown that more people than not are interested in improved background checks. They're interested in raising the age to buy an assault rifle from 18 up to 21. Abbott has refused to do any of that. He and others in the legislature say that they're more interested in, as they say, hardening targets and in looking at mental health reform.
Meanwhile, Jim, there's yet another tragedy in Texas, this time at the very southern tip of the state in a city called Brownsville. A horrific scene where an SUV plowed into some pedestrians, killing eight people. What do we know about this so far?
Well, it appears to be an accident. We don't know that at this point, but it does appear that it was some kind of an accident.
At about 8:30 in the morning, we received a phone call about a major accident where a gray Land Rover ran over several people that were waiting at a bus stop across the street from the Osnon Center.
Brownsville, Texas is down at the southern tip of the state. It's just this side of the Rio Grande from Matamoros, Mexico. And it's been the site of migrant arrivals, people coming across the border legally, in a lot of cases applying with the Customs and Border Protection for immigration status. They then are taken elsewhere. They take the bus or take whatever means they can to other parts of the country to be with family or other sponsors. That's apparently what was happening with these folks when this silver-colored SUV came plowing right down the sidewalk alongside the curb. The driver also was injured. He is taken into custody and is facing charges, but also is hospitalized and being treated for injuries suffered in that same crash. There are also tests underway to determine the blood alcohol level to see if this person might have been intoxicated.
We do have to point out this deadly accident comes within days of Title 42 sunsetting, and that is the COVID-era policy that seems to be creating a surge of migrants along our southern border.
Police obviously are investigating the possibility that this may be something more than simply an accident, but at this point, it does appear that it was simply an accident involving people who had just come over the Rio Grande from Mexico.
ABC's Jim Ryan keeping an eye on both of these tragedies taking place in Texas over the weekend. Thank you, Jim.
Sure thing. Anytime.
Next up on Start Here, a death on the city subway led to protesters shutting down an entire stop. That's after the break.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Over the weekend, demonstrations took place in New York City calling for charges to be brought against a former Marine accused of killing another passenger on a subway train after he put that man into a chokehold. Video of the incident was taken by a bystander and quickly went viral online. The incident prompted demonstrators to even shut down a New York City subway on Saturday, jumping onto the track to block trains from moving. ABC's Mona Kosaravdi is watching this story for us. And Mona, let's just start with the incident that prompted all of this. What do we know about what happened between the former Marine, Daniel Penny, and Jordan Neely, who was homeless?
So what we know is that on Monday, May 1st, Jordan Neely was aboard an F train in Manhattan when he began acting erratically, according to witnesses, screaming at passengers. And the now viral video shows that Daniel Penny, a 24-year-old former Marine sergeant, and two others restrained him, Penny putting him in a chokehold for several minutes until he fell unconscious. And now we do know that the medical examiner has ruled it a homicide, Neely later dying at the hospital.
And passengers who were on the subway, some of the bystanders who saw this incident go down, what were they saying that Neely was doing leading up to this that prompted this subdual?
So what we know from witnesses that were aboard the train, they say that he was acting erratically, again, screaming at passengers. There was a video that was released that showed Neely just shortly before this incident.
Thirsty in the shelter, milk, TV, and drink, and that's what happened. Thirsty in the milk, food hungry, and that's what's going on.
He kept repeating, I'm hungry, I want food. We believe that was some of the things that he was saying aboard that train as well. I do want to clarify that he wasn't physically violent as far as we know. According to Daniel Penny, in a statement that he released through his attorneys, he says that Mr. Neely aboard that train was aggressively threatening Daniel Penny and the other passengers, and that with the help of others, they acted to protect themselves until help arrived. Now, I do want to clarify, too, that Daniel Penny's attorneys say that he never intended to harm Mr. Neely and he could not have foreseen his untimely death.
What do we know about Jordan Neely? Mona, you actually spoke with some people who knew him.
So what we learned about Jordan Neely is that he was once a Michael Jackson impersonator. I talked to a friend of his who said that she met him in Times Square where he would draw crowds as a Michael Jackson impersonator. She says that he was kind. We also learned through Neely's family's attorney that he has struggled with mental health issues since the age of 14 after witnessing the brutal death of his mother. When I spoke with his friend, she says that he was really struggling in the last several years with his mental health issues and that he was homeless and that he seemed frustrated. She said he seemed sad and that he seemed ashamed, too, of his situation.
This incident has become a flashpoint. It's not only has the video gone viral, but this seems to underscore some of the larger issues that New York City, but even many urban areas are facing, between concerns about safety to mental health crises. Here in New York, that's been an issue, especially on the subway, something the mayor has focused on. Can you talk about why this has become such a lightning rod?
Yeah, Mark, it's renewed the conversation around mental illness and public safety.
Justice!
Over the weekend, we saw protesters taking to the street. They started in Union Square, then they headed inside the subway station of 63rd and Lexington. Many were escorted out after things got heated. Some protesters we even saw, aside from shouting, some jumped onto the subway tracks, blocking the F train from coming into the station. Police arrested about 13 protesters, and then they went back onto the streets and continued the protest. Once again, that conversation has been renewed. It's something that Mayor Eric Adams has focused on.
We cannot have people with severe emotional illnesses on our subway system.
He sent more police to patrol train stations and sweep homeless encampments. This conversation, it has divided New Yorkers. Some believe that Jordan Neely was struggling and just needed help, that he was possibly just hungry and frustrated.
It is devastating, and it was absolutely preventable. And the city and the state have failed us again.
And then there are those who believe that Daniel Penny was acting in the best interests of himself and other passengers and trying to protect them and trying to ensure that everyone was safe.
And are some saying that there is a racial element to this, that there are these images that have gone viral showing a white man putting a black man in a chokehold and eventually leading this person's death? Is that part of the conversation you're hearing?
that has been brought up. I mean, that is definitely something that has been an issue for some of the protesters as well. The fact that police questioned Daniel Penny and that he wasn't immediately charged in the death of Jordan Neely. That is something that protesters are demanding happen immediately. That's why they took to the streets. They want to make sure that Daniel Penny is held accountable. And they believe that partially because of the racial dynamics, that that didn't happen immediately. And so we do know that this case now could likely go before a grand jury as early as this week. And that may change soon.
Is there anything that we are, in fact, hearing from the city, be it the mayor's office or the police, about the possibility of charges against Daniel Penny?
So, yeah, we're hearing from Mayor Eric Adams that he is asking the public to remain patient and see this process play out.
The district attorney, the police department, they're doing their investigations, and I'm going to respect that.
He is asking people not to jump to conclusions and for everything to remain peaceful in the interim.
All right, ABC's Mona Kosarabdi with the latest there. Mona, thank you.
Thank you.
At the end of last month, President Biden made it official. At 80 years old, he would seek a second term in the Oval Office.
This is not a time to be complacent. That's why I'm running for re-election.
Now, with a potential 2020 rematch shaping up between Biden and the current Republican frontrunner Donald Trump, a new ABC News Washington Post poll is looking at how Americans feel about the fitness of these two men to be president. ABC's political director Rick Klein joins us. And Rick, I found this poll so interesting that these two men are just 4 years apart, but there's a big divide in how they're viewed by Americans.
Yeah, it's a huge difference. And I think anyone that's confronting the reality of this campaign has to recognize that people view Joe Biden differently than Donald Trump when it comes to mental acuity, when it comes to physical ability. By a 20-point margin, people feel that former President Trump is more mentally sharp or mentally sharp enough to be president over Biden. The skepticism extends to the physical health. And just overall, 68% of people think that Biden is too old for another term. Only 44% say the same about Donald Trump. So age is going to be an issue regardless of who the matchup is, whether it's Biden against Trump or Biden against someone else. But it's not like you just take it off the table if it is Biden and Trump. The reality is people view them differently.
How much should we read the tea leaves on polls like this? You know, this is one, albeit important, consideration facing these two candidates, but it's one consideration in a larger picture of who these two candidates are. We're also 18 months out from the election itself, assuming both of these people become their party's nominee. But what should we take away from this?
Yeah, look, the biggest point is that we're a year and a half out, and it's important not to overread hypothetical matchups. But they do tell you trends, and they do tell you developing storylines, and campaigns read them for those reasons. Even if they'll be skeptical, as the Biden team is, about these results, they're saying that this poll, this ABC News Washington Post poll, is an outlier, that the approval rating that we're seeing for President Biden is somewhat lower than other polls. That all may be true, but it doesn't mean that there aren't real warning signs about Joe Biden, the concerns around him, as well as the support that he has among coalitions. I mean, he won independents going away. He trails them in this poll. Latino voters, Black voters, we're seeing real softeners, young voters, real softening in the support that he has among some of the core Democratic groups. The groups, frankly, the Democrats don't win without. And it may be that people are just voicing their frustration right now, but these are true issues that the Biden campaign and Democrats need to start addressing.
And you mentioned Biden's approval numbers there. This poll looked at that downward trend for the president, no?
Yeah, look, we have it very low compared to other polls, 36%, which is a career low, rather. I should know that other polls have him in somewhere in the low 40s. None of them are good, but the trend line here is very bad, particularly going into a couple of weeks that could be quite tense around debt ceiling negotiations and other showdowns with Congress, legal scrutiny that's surrounding his son, as well as former President Trump, of course. He doesn't start at a strong base of support. He hasn't for a while, just a few months into office. Back in 2021, you saw the lines crossed with approval and disapproval. He hasn't been able to turn that around. And, you know, a week or so, 2 weeks into the Biden campaign, this is not a position of strength vis-a-vis what most first-term presidents look like. People's honeymoons end, but usually by this point in successful re-election bids, you see the president begin to right the ship. We just haven't seen that in the numbers just yet.
Yeah. You know, when we talk about Biden, we see these low approval numbers. We see challenges that are facing the administration from inflation to debt ceiling and things like that. The questions about his mental acuity. Does this open the door at all going forward for a potential Democratic challenger to step up. We know that there are some, but no major candidates have thrown their hat in the ring.
Yeah, look, the door's open. No one's walking through it of significance other than RFK Jr. And Marianne Williamson, neither of whom have shown so far that they put together a credible national campaign. We're not seeing major Democrats step up. I think most Democrats, many Republicans who were hesitant to take on Trump, view the history of taking on an incumbent president as almost never successful. And almost always something that they pay a political price on. The examples of Ted Kennedy taking on Jimmy Carter, the example of Buchanan taking on George H.W. Bush, those are still fresh in people's minds in politics, even though they were a while back. So no one is taking that plunge, even though the fundamentals are there for Democrats to say, let's pause a second before we anoint Joe Biden to be our nominee for a second term.
Yeah, and for Donald Trump, there are a lot of X factors down the road. Probably most notably of all are his growing legal troubles. So how does that play into the possibility of a potential rematch here?
Yeah, look, that is an unknown right now. We've had a clear majority of respondents in our poll think that he should be facing criminal charges for a range of different investigations. What's really striking to me, and maybe the most shocking part of this poll, is that even among those who think that he should face criminal charges for trying to overturn the election, and that's a majority of the country in this poll, 18%, that's almost one in five, say they would vote for Trump anyway against Joe Biden. And look, you could say that's not plausible, and maybe people are just telling pollsters that to vent their frustration. But that is a really striking number that I think speaks to the weakness right now of Joe Biden, as well as the potential strength of Donald Trump, that even criminal indictments, even thinking that he should face criminal charges, isn't enough to disqualify him in the minds of a big chunk of voters. He is the front runner, a period, full stop. And no matter how we asked the question, we asked it open-ended, where we gave people the chance to just answer the question however they want. Who do you support for president? Among Republican and Republican-leaning voters, Donald Trump had the support about 45%. When we gave people the top names, including Ron DeSantis, including Tim Scott, Nikki Haley, Mike Pence, people like that, Trump's support actually went up. He went to 51%, and DeSantis is less than half of that support. Now, this obviously, the first debate's a few months away. DeSantis hasn't even announced his candidacy yet, much less gone toe-to-toe with Trump on a debate stage. Lots of reasons I think it could change, but Donald Trump starts at a position that is much, much stronger than it was back in 2015, going into 2016. He starts as the going-away frontrunner for the Republican nomination.
ABC's political director Rick Klein breaking it down for us. Thanks, Rick.
Hey, thank you.
Okay, one more quick break, and when we return, yes, there was a winner, but that's not the only headline out of this year's Kentucky Derby.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing, the 149th running of the Kentucky Derby took place on Saturday.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby.
What was supposed to be a day of trifectas, seersucker suits, fancy hats, and mint juleps was instead marred by the deaths of several horses leading up to the run for the roses. In the days before the race, five horses died at Churchill Downs, and then, in the hours just before the main event, horses Chloe's Dream and Freezing Point both had to be euthanized after being injured in undercard races.
Chloe's Dream taken off in an equine ambulance after taking a bad step in the first turn. The horse later euthanized.
PETA called the racetrack a killing field in a statement on Saturday.
There have been six horses who have died at Churchill Downs in the days leading up to this Kentucky Derby 149.
Churchill Downs offered its condolences in a statement and said it's committed to the health and safety of the horses, but the deaths come at a difficult time for the sport at large.
Bob Baffert does it again! Medina Spirit has won the Kentucky Derby!
One of the sport's greatest trainers, Bob Baffert, sat out his second Kentucky Derby in a row this year after his horse won the 2021 race, but was later disqualified for failing a race day drug test. Baffert's attorneys have claimed it was from a topical ointment meant to treat a skin condition. And then there were the deaths of more than 30 horses 4 years ago at California's Santa Anita Park. That led to safety reforms, but it simultaneously left the future of horse racing in doubt. And now, with the deaths of 7 horses at Churchill Downs this past week, there's been a different kind of attention on horse racing's first jewel in the Triple Crown. Oh, and by the way, the winner of Saturday's race was Longshot Mage at 15-1, who joins just 3 other horses who won the Derby with only 3 previous starts. Among those, though, Justify, the last Triple Crown winner. The second jewel of the Triple Crown, the Preakness, runs May 20th. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Mark Remillard. Brad is back tomorrow. Talk to you later.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.